accession number 23812, real 6.
Mr. Doy, real 6. Now, we're coming to the end, I think, of your time in Liverpool, unless you've got anything else you want to say about Liverpool.
No, I think I've covered it pretty well, Liverpool, because one can go on for quite a time, but I think it's quite repetitive what I would have to tell you, really. Perhaps I could go a little bit forward, because we are now approaching October.
October 1941.
We are now approaching October. And it became known to us that soon we would be leaving Knowsley Park to a destination of which would be declared to us at some time. We would, all of us would have 7 days embarkation leave in which we could go home to our families and enjoy our 7 days embarkation leave. So we were all issued with travel warrants to go back to our respective civilian dwellings. So away I went and had quite a good time.
What do you remember of your embarkation leave? Yeah, it's my time.
My embarkation leave, I met up with several other chaps who were on leave, and once again, it all boiled down, I think, to having a good time. And a good time in those days was the social side of things, basically pubs. That was what we was a second home to us in those days. And to get back to Adlam's bitter and that sort of thing was worth coming home alone. But
what did you? Did your parents? For you, perhaps a bit of excitement coming up at overseas posting. But your parents must have worried. Were you aware? I mean, you're very young, but were you aware of what your parents were going through?
I suppose you must realise. I suppose we must have realised, even in our more youthful days, that that your parents were obviously going to worry about you. And I think we tried our best to sort of placate their bother and that sort of thing as to what could happen to us and that as best as we could. It's something I can't really remember, but
did they notice a change in you? I mean, you got away as that little lad.
No, I don't think so. I think that I do recall that my mother just wanted to have a photograph taken with me, which I did have a photograph taken. Yeah, those were things in those days which I think most of the parents did want a photograph of their sons and daughters, you know, I suppose, really in their minds, in case something really terrible happened to us, you know, we didn't get back. I dare say that was probably what it was all about.
Yeah, so you went back to Knowsley Park.
So from embarkation back to Knowsley Park.
It's still October.
Yes,
this is October.
Yes. And then there was all the usual packing up the gears.
So what do you remember of that? What sort of preparations were going on?
The preparations, what were going on, that all the various things which were associated with the 6th Battalion of the Norfolks. And perhaps here I can state that perhaps I've missed something out, which I suppose is important in a way. I was asked to return to the signals that night, and during a period of that time, I was associated with the headquarters of whatnot and a regimental signaller.
Before we go on, we better talk about that. So, which company had you been with? I should have asked that before as
well. I think I was in A Company at the time, whilst I was doing the military part, you know, and the guard work, and It was from then, after that, I was asked to join the regiment. Obviously, my records must have been there as to what I was and what I was fairly adept at doing. And I became a regimental signaller.
So you were posted to the signal section?
Headquarters, yeah.
And what was the composition of the signal section? If we just deal with that now, it makes it get it out of the
way. The composition of that was very much, as I've already related, up at the barracks there. You became a unit.
No, but how many of you?
There was, I couldn't really say how many. I suppose there'd be about a dozen signallers in the signal unit of the headquarters.
Did you have an officer?
I must say that when I was a signaller there, that was on the latter part of being there, so I wasn't really a signaller in the headquarters for that length of time, really, yeah.
So, all the preparations for moving.
Yeah, so there was all that sort of thing to pack up, or anything to do with the signal side of things, you know, the various receiving apparatus, etc., and all the equipment to do with signalling had to be packed up. Also, all weaponry and that sort of thing was encased in big cases and that sort of thing. Well, anything appertaining to the unit as a whole of which we couldn't carry ourselves. We, of course, had our own valises and that sort of and packs to carry with our own things such as ground sheets and anything of a personal use to us, or utensils. Eating utensils, various things associated with hygiene and shaving and washing and that sort of thing. That was all included in the packs.
Now, had you been given any special kit, or in fact tropical kit, brought to the point?
No, not at that particular time. No.
So you pack it up?
Because had we done so and got tropical things, then instead of being a secret, then we were destined for the Middle East, would we not be, at that time? See what I mean? So it would have given the game away to outsiders. We were not allowed. We were sworn to secrecy, not to talk anything outside.
But you didn't know anyway?
About leaving the place or anything like that. The destination we didn't know, so we couldn't get that. But we were not allowed to say that we were leaving Knowsley Park, you know, on embarkation leave. Because had we said embarkation, that's pretty obviously where somebody could have followed us to see where we were destined for. Yeah. So, right, so then off we go. So where do we find ourselves? We find ourselves eventually, after a long journey, in Scotland.
What's your train journey, was it?
It was a train journey.
What was
yes.
it like?
The train journey itself?
As a regiment, as a battalion?
As a battalion, well, I think that was pretty well organised and well worked out on the various units that existed in the battalion. And I can't recall very little about the journey, to be honest with you, but when we arrived in Scotland, our place that we arrived at was Gurwick on the Clyde, and we disembarked. So, as I just said, we arrived at Gurwick in Scotland on the Clyde, and there we congregated, and we were put into these various small boats and that sort of thing, and all were gathered together into our units, and we found ourselves on the Clyde, eventually finishing up to where a large convoy had congregated. I can only assume that that convoy of ships had been accumulating over a period of several weeks, because there was a considerable number of ships there, including warships as well, or the naval ships. We then found ourselves, on a ship called the Duchess of Athol. And we were accommodated on that ship, and we had to wait our turn for eventual moving off in the convoy, which I think, as far as I can recall, must have been at least 7 days that we were on that ship, awaiting for the convoy to move off.
Now, where were you aboard the ship? What was your troop deck like?
Well,
the mess deck or whatever.
Well, I found myself down the base of the ship, which of course is a converted troop ship. And I found myself right down on the lower decks of the Duchess of Athol. And lo and behold, what we expected to sleep in then were hammocks, which they sound and look very simple to get into, but we found that once you tried to get into one side of the hammock, you found yourself falling over the other side. So it was a case of getting used to sleeping in a hammock. When we moved off in the big convoy, we found ourselves getting out into the North Atlantic. And every day, the captain of the ship would come down to where our sleeping quarters, and everything was very strict in relation to discipline. And the captain would come and with our officer, and they would inspect the sleeping equipment, the hammock, and all had to be folded up into a certain dimension. I can't remember which.
But that was
done
daily.
Yes, daily. This was discipline, of course, when one reflect, and woe betide if you hadn't got it done properly, you know. You were severely reprimanded. Life on board the Duchess of Athol was fairly easy. We were allowed up on deck.
Can I just ask about the mess decks? Were they crowded down there? What were they like?
They were not overcrowded. They were crowded, quite obviously. They had to be crowded to accommodate the battalions, the various battalions which had formed there. The other battalions, the 4th and 5th Norfolks, the Cambridgeshires, the Suffolks, etc., etc. And we were allowed up on deck.
Were you seasick at all?
I have never been seasick. I take it that it was probably because I was used to the sea in Southwark when I used to go out to sea fishing and that sort of thing.
What about the others, though?
There was many who were seasick, yeah. The usual thing.
Was that a big problem?
A problem? I wouldn't really know, but it certainly made a mess of the toilets and that, which you were likely to skid along if you didn't watch out, with vomit all over the place. But
would you get extra rations from that? From people
not
eating their food?
No, not really. No. And
so you say. Sorry, I keep interrupting. You were going up on deck.
So we were allowed up on deck. Well, whilst we were up there, I was able to survey and look at the escort, and one of the escorts was the old aircraft carrier Eagle. It was named Eagle. It was a very small aircraft, and there were also one or two destroyers, and evidently there were German submarines around, because every now and again there would be depth charges dropped a net. It wasn't long before, which I think is typical of the British servicemen and typical of British people, of calling one another nicknames. And we soon called the Duchess of Athol the Rolling Duchess, because it was completely unstable, as it appeared to be. We rolled from one side to the other. And no wonder people were seasick, but that was how we found it. Now, after several days in the convoy, and whilst we were off Greenland, in the North Atlantic, I think this was off somewhere where the HMS Hood had been sunk by the Bismarck. We were informed over the intercom that today, at such and such 100 hours, you will witness a historic event when a non-belligerent nation will take over and escort a belligerent nation's vessels. We hadn't a clue what this meant, but precisely at that particular hour we heard the droning of planes, aeroplanes, and to our amazement a mass of aeroplanes came flying over the top of us almost at mast height, and when we looked up we realised they were Americans, all in their splendour. There were our ships all in their camouflage, and there were the brightly coloured aircraft. When we looked, there was the American Navy steamer, there were aircraft carriers all in brilliant grey as opposed to our camouflage ships. We then saw our own escort turning about, and off they went, and we were escorted by the American Navy. It appeared to be the whole of the American Navy, with whistles blowing, horns going, typical American thing, flags flying, and we wondered what this was all about, or where our destination was. And of course, we then found ourselves approaching Nova Scotia, and Halifax in Nova Scotia. And one must remember, while I'm relating this, that this was before Pearl Harbor. So this was actually a secret mission. And in no way was it to be known that America were really in the war, without declaring war. So it was quite a historic event. At Halifax in Nova Scotia, we disembarked from our ships, our British ships, and we were taken into the town of Halifax, and there we were put into various huts of different descriptions.
Would this still be October, or we drifted into the
November? It would be it would then be running into November. We found of which to our minds, once again, going back to our hometowns and what we had read in books and that sort of thing, there we found log cabins in Halifax. Obviously, it had not progressed to being a modern town, and they were all log cabins, which was quite an excitement for us. Once again, after about a fortnight at Halifax in Nova Scotia, we embarked on three crack liners, and they were converted cruise liners, and these were the names. One was the West Point, another the Wakefield, and the ship what I embarked on was called the Mount Vernon. And while still under escort by the naval might of neutral America, we proceeded on a long journey of almost 3 months' duration. Whilst on board that ship, I found myself down in the swimming pool, which had been converted, a swimming pool which had been converted in this very large liner. And the swimming pool had got these tiers of canvas bedding. I must say it wasn't air conditioned, and it was very hot down there. And as one approached our beds and that down in this hold, the stench of the men's feet was absolutely nauseating. And I was very pleased to think that we were allowed to have the freedom of the ship, and I found myself sleeping up on the decks of the ship. I took some blankets up, and there I found myself sleeping up there, away from that sort of thing. Life was free and easy on that ship. And after the...
what was the food like?
After the rationing that we had in England, a small piece of butter, you know, and the like, we found to our amazement that the Americans knew nothing about rationing. There was these massive built Americans, big muscular chaps they were, coming up from the hold with big carcasses of beef, all that sort of thing, things we had long lost sight of. And the food, well, by comparison, we lived like lords. We had these mess decks, we had tables to sit at, we had these trays of which had several sections in, of which, yes, for example, if you had pork, next to it was apple sauce, unheard of in our days in England. And so we lived, I must say, with the Americans, who are extremely friendly people, well, almost like lords by comparison. So that was life on board the Mount Vernon.
Then were you doing any training? Because one of the things we're showing supposed to have learned is to keep your feet hard.
No, we did no training, weapon training on the Mount Vernon. What we did have to do was physical exercise, obviously. And we had to race round the decks of the ship, and done the various things that one would expect to do in physical exercise. Quite strenuous work it was, but we were quite pleased to do it, because otherwise I think it would have been absolute boredom not to have done something. But it was a wonderful life on board the Mount Vernon. I must say that the journey was fairly uneventful, in as much as enemy contacts were made, purely and simply because quite obviously the Americans wished to keep their involvement a secret. We were destined, as I learnt later, for the Middle East. That was where our destination was, and we were to be a floating regiment. We were to be a floating regiment, to be called anywhere at any time. I think that when we proceeded on the neutral American ships, it was a very long journey of 3 months' duration, as it turned out. And we called at Trinidad.
What's your remember that? What happened when you got to Trinidad?
Well, at Trinidad, we were quite thrilled to go into Trinidad, because the entrance to Trinidad, I think it's called, and I can't be truly sure of this, I think it's called the Lion's Mouth or something. And as you go through this big entrance to what was Trinidad Bay, a massive bay, you had no idea that you were going into this terrific bay. And each side, as you went into this big mouth of the what was called a dragon's mouth, I think it was, I can't be sure, where there were all these tropical creepers coming down to the cliffs and that sort of thing, which was quite unique from our personal experience of England. And then, to our amazement, we entered this gigantic bay, of where all the shipping and that sort of thing was housed and anchored down in the bay. It was during our time in that bay that the ship was replenished, and we were allowed to take in, as these little ships came up to ours, we were allowed to take anything and to barter anything what we had for what they had got. So we bartered all sorts of things to these small ships, the natives on these small ships, to get things like bananas and things, so anything to do with that. Perhaps we got a penknife, and with that penknife we bartered for a hand of bananas and that. So we were there for a time, I can't say how long, and once the ships were replenished, we left there, Trinidad, and it was whilst we progressed towards South America itself that we understood there were enemy shipping about, and
I think they
were surface raiders and that sort of thing around, and U-boats, but we never encountered any, so that I can't be truly sure. But what I do know is that whilst we were off the south coast of America, it came through that the Japanese had attacked Pearl Harbor.
And what did you think of that? That was December 7th?
Pearl Harbor, we had never heard of. I could never tell you where it was at that time. It was something, a place we had never heard of. But I do remember that all the Americans on board the ship were very upset at what had happened. And I can remember them saying to us, or one of them saying, "Now we'll show you guys how to win a war." You know, typical American statement. So what happened then, I think it was because the fact that there were these U-boats around off the, or enemy shipping around off the south coast of America, that we went right down almost to the Falkland Islands. So therefore, although we were kitted out with tropical attire and a pith helmet in those days, during our time on board the...
That had happened on board ship.
Yeah.
I'll ask you about that later.
Yeah. Whilst we were fitted out with that, because we were then entering a colder part of the world towards the Falklands, we had to go into khaki drill once again.
Now, what was the tropical kit? Could you describe it to me?
Tropical kit was light khaki or sandy coloured material type of jacket and shorts, and also socks, knee length socks, you know, like one would come up to your knees. That was the type of thing that we were fitted out, and the pith helmet.
What did you think of the pith helmet?
The pith helmet, of course, was alien to we Suffolk boys, and we find it quite exciting to wear this type of dress. This is something which was unique, and therefore was alien to our imaginations.